So Pico's a bit caught between two poles, nature and reality. And nature and reality is an old chestnut in philosophical terms. If you look at any area of human life through history, you eventually come up against a fight between nature and reality. There's an argument going on, there's even a war going on between nature and reality in most philosophical traditions. It's something people grapple with. Is nature different from reality? How is it the same? How is it different from reality? If you look at poetry, if you look at the arts, Wordsworth and Blake, for instance, had a whole barney their whole life long about how nature and reality related to each other. If you look at religious and secular philosophy, it's one of the fundamental questions that people keep turning over. And, of course, it doesn't just happen in ideas. People have fought wars over this kind of stuff, about definitions of the nature of reality. Different Christian traditions who disagreed about this question have got into real difficulty with each other. I was thinking earlier, it's slightly tangential, but I heard a news item today about a would-be senator who'd said something that seemed a bit unwise about rape. Something in the area of, even though he was recognising that rape was a horrible thing, he was saying somehow the creation of life that comes through that must be God's will. Of course, the world's up in arms about this, and in some ways so it should be. But I was thinking about this and I thought, well, if you want to understand how somebody gets there, this is the area. This is the area. This is why this stuff's important. It's not abstract and divorced from normal life just because it's rooted in history. Now, ultimately, from a Buddhist perspective, this is a false dichotomy. Buddhism goes for the middle way, and the middle way doesn't mean you steer a path in between. It means you steer a path over and above. It just doesn't accept the terms of the proposition. It says, no, 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 you're seeing the whole thing wrong. You don't have to reconcile nature and reality as if they're opposing. You don't have to justify one or the other. So I want to explore this with the help of a guy who I find inspiring. He's a professor, again, sadly, probably much neglected these days, called Edgar Wind. And he wrote a famous book in its time called Pagan Mysteries of the Renaissance, where he looked at the Neoplatonists and he looked at Pico della Mirandola and Marsilio Ficino. And he said, what were they trying to get at? And why is it still important to us? Why is it still important to us? So here's what Edgar Wind says about Pico della Mirandola's little definition of natural magic. So remember, natural magic is a science concerned with the virtues and actions of natural forces and their effect on each other and on their natural dependence. What the human magician produces through art, nature produces naturally by producing man. And this is what Edgar Wind says. This explains why magic is a moral force. It makes man recognise in himself the forces of nature, and in nature the model of his own force. By inserting his magical art into nature, he can release forces that are greater than his own. It's slightly erotic, I suppose, masculine erotic image, but you insert your art into nature and you release forces that are greater than your own. And Edgar Wind saying, this is a moral thing. This is a moral action. So magic, in Pico della Mirandola's sense, is seen as an ethical process. What you do with your mind matters. What you do with your thoughts matter. Because when you see things in a certain way, when you perceive the world in a certain way, you make a world that you take part in through thought and through action. We looked at this last week with the Dhammapada. The world is made up of mind. It's led by mind. It's guided and shaped by mind. It's the very start of the Buddha's suttas. That's what the Buddha sees. As soon as he gains enlightenment, it's that. You're making this up as you go along. I'm making this up as I go along. But you're all making this up as we go along. So what you do with your mind really matters, and it's an ethical issue. And the flip side of that is it's also an opportunity. That's why it's a magical art. It's what we did in meditation earlier. You have a choice. Each moment. Things arise in your experience. You've set up the arising of them in the past with the way you've seen the world and the way you've habituated yourself to behave. So you take in information through your senses. You have your habitual feelings that arise. You can't really do much about them at this point. But if you can slow the process down, you can start to see the possibilities for change. It's Pratitya Samutpada, basic Buddhist doctrine. Things arise in dependence upon conditions. And when those conditions are no longer there, they pass away. And so it is for you, so it is in your mind and with the world that you make. It's actions and consequences as they play out in your inner world and as they play out in the outer world, and really looking to see how those two things are not unrelated. It's not always easy to see. We explored this last week looking at karma. Pratitya Samutpada, on the level of karma, on the level of human behaviour, is sometimes complex. It's particularly complex when you look at it through life and through dying and through death. But nonetheless, you can look and see and observe. How does what I do with my mind affect the world that I perceive? How does my behaviour set me up again for another experience that rolls on and rolls on and rolls on? And then, once you've done that, once you look at it, how can I slow all this down? How can I sit still and quiet and notice the arising of things? And when I notice the arising of things, how can I open up the kind of space with mindfulness that allows me not to just repeat the same habit? In a way, you're kind of reprogramming yourself. If magic doesn't work as a metaphor, well, computer science, you're reprogramming yourself. Computers are magic. iPads are magic. I've no idea how an iPad works. I touch it and light comes out of it and I can talk to people. And my mum is in the iPad sometimes. She lives in Scotland. I mean, it's magic. I think it was Asimov, wasn't it, who said at a certain point there are certain kinds of technology that become so removed from your normal experience of understanding that they're akin to magic. In terms of seeing practice and meditation as magic, what we have to see is that every moment in our mind, every day, we have the opportunity to make that kind of conscious intervention, to insert our magical art into the nature of things and release forces that are greater than our own.